James McCanny here, going right into the show. December 4th, 2008. And the main science topic tonight I will be discussing. For many weeks in the past, I've been talking about the plasma discharge comet model, the effects on a planet when a large cometary object would come through the solar system. And this week, I'll be talking about a little bit different perspective of that event. What would it look like if you were off in outer space, far away from the planet Earth or another planet, and a comet came through the solar system and had a close encounter with that planet? What would it look like from a distance? In fact, we see that the ancients do talk about this. They talk about seeing these comets moving through the solar system and how they interact with the other planets. And what I'll be talking about also is, what if you were in a spaceship? What if we could build space colonies, move them away from Earth, and have these sprinkled around the solar system to preserve the human species? And what would it look like if one of these large comets came through the solar system and, in fact, encountered one of the planets, or specifically Earth? What would it look like from a distance? What would this comet do? What would we see? And then I'll try and relate that to what ancients actually talked about. And by the way, we do see these kind of events occurring in modern times. When comets come near the sun, we've seen comets interacting with other planets. When weather situations occur, so there's plenty of modern data to corroborate this. It's not just what the ancients saw, it's what we see today. And every comet that comes in the solar system, especially ones that get near the sun, have an electrical connection. It's not something you always see visibly, but with X-rays, with ultraviolet lights, telescopes, etc., you can see these, and they have been witnessed many times. So, at any rate, that'll be the main science topic. And I just want to mention that last week we had some kind of a difficulty, I'm not sure, but many people were unable to hear the show. There was some static in place on the shortwave feed, and about 5 minutes towards the end of the internet feed, there was a woman that started talking over my voice, and so on the internet, the feed seemed to be, like I say, two people talking at once. And so, anyway, I just want to make sure that people go and listen to the archive of last week's show if you were not able to hear it. It was a very important show, and it was the Thanksgiving special. But you'll find that on my webpage, jmccsci.com, 7 letters, and just scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. You'll find the archive, radio archive subpage, and all of my radio shows are archived there. But be sure to listen. In fact, I would suggest you listen twice to last week's show, because there's really a tremendous amount of content in that show, the November 27th, 2008 show. So be sure you listen to that one. I'd suggest listening to it twice, just so you make sure you get all of the content out of there. This coming Saturday, I will be a guest, as I am many times, on a radio station in Minneapolis, WCCO Radio. It'll be 1 a.m. Saturday morning. That's Central Daylight Time. 1 a.m. Central Daylight Time. The frequency, it's an AM station on your AM radio, 830 on your AM dial. And this station can be heard any place east of the Rockies. I know we've gotten feedback from Mexico, the Caribbean, Jamaica, as far south, of course, as Florida, the East Coast, and the 38 eastern states up to Nova Scotia and into Canada. So it's heard, once again, 830 on your AM dial, on your radio. And what happens is, after hours, they're able to turn up their power to the full 50,000 watts. And I'll be a guest there with host Brad Walton, where I've been a guest many times in the past. We'll be talking about actually a quite long list of topics, and I'll be on there for about an hour and a half. So this coming Saturday morning, you can also listen on the internet at WCCORadio.com. And the reason we tack on the radio there is because there's a WCCO television station also. So WCCORadio.com, live streaming of that show. 1 a.m. this coming Saturday morning, Central Time. So calculate your time based on where you are relative to Central Time. This came out just this past week. It's the first time I saw it anyway. There's a movie coming out, supposedly going to be released this summer, 2012, The End of the World. And it's done by the same producer that did The Day After Tomorrow. And I'm sure many of you saw that movie. The book was written by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber and then made into a screenplay called The Day After Tomorrow. The book was called The Coming Global Superstorm, and I did a number of interviews, actually, with Art Bell on that particular book, just commenting on the book, etc. But the movie 2012 is being has been produced by the same producer as the Day After Tomorrow and Godzilla. But the 2012 movie looks like it's everything that you ever wanted in a disaster movie and more. But it's amazing because I would say this is the culmination of many of these movies, but a tremendous disinformation piece. This movie is designed to fool the public. And the biggest thing here, as I've said in the past, is not what they say, but what they don't say, because the real story of Earth disasters has been written. It's in the Colburn, it's in the Bible, and it has, by the way, the Mayans never predicted the end of the world in 2012. The Mayan calendar is, the Mayans had numerous calendars, but their major calendar was based on the cycles of Venus, had absolutely nothing to do with the sun and the moon, or December 21st, 2012. There is no great galactic alignment when all of the tidal waves and all this will occur. Tremendous amount of disinformation in here. But, of course, the average person on the street will be fooled. And as we've always said, that the date of 2012 is picked because it's going to keep people thinking out there someplace, out there in time, when everything that's going to happen relative to at least the enslavement of the population is going to happen long before 2012. And with the political situation as it's occurring now, with the new president and all of the old political fossils that are being put into the White House, the cabinet, etc., it certainly is not what you would call change that you can believe in. In fact, when they announced that the Volcker guy would be the head of the financial recovery team, good grief, here's a guy that watched us go into plunge into almost eternal economic debt under Reagan with the Star Wars program. Anyway, I'm not going to talk much more about that. The only point in mentioning it is that you have to get ready out there to take care of yourselves. And the political situation, the staged terrorist events around the world, setting the stage for American policy, U.S. policy around the world. We all know that these are faked, staged incidents to create political unrest around the world, and we know who does this. It makes the bankers more powerful, and it's their little police force running around out there doing this. But 2012 is just another one of the great disinformation ploys. And this will kind of be the granddaddy of them all. But the reason I'm doing this series of shows right now is to give people, at least the people who are intelligent enough to search and really listen and dig for the truth, that these people, the very small group of people relative to the world population, would know that, in fact, it would be a giant comet coming from outer space that would be the disaster, the bearer of bad news, so to speak. And the one thing I want to mention about the trailers, you can see the trailers for this movie 2012 on the internet, but just do a Google search under 2012, the movie, and you will find all of the trailers for this movie. But the one scene that's very graphic is the Earth is there, tranquil, you see it from a distance, and all of a sudden there's a big round planet that comes in, and very slowly, as you would expect the planet to move, comes in and crashes into the middle of the ocean, sending tidal waves, of course, over the Himalayas, etc. But the point is, the graphic part of this, the disinformation, is that this big round ball, it's the image that it leaves in everybody's head, that you're going to look up and see this big round thing, and that's going to be the big thing that crashes into Earth and destroys Earth, when in fact, that has nothing to do. In fact, the anything big like that moving through the solar system would be in the form of a comet. It would be discharging the solar capacitor, and you would probably not even see a round object. You would more than likely just see a very large comet. And at that point, NASA and all of the disinformation sources that have been set up, the outreach programs, would all be saying, don't mind that little comet up there. It cannot hurt you. It cannot do anything. So don't worry about that little comet there. It's not going to do anything. And that is the great deception. That's the great deception of the movie 2012. It's the great deception of all the books that have come out regarding 2012 in the last couple of years. They flooded the markets. Amazon is flooded with books on this topic. And every one of them has something, one thing in common. They all have a big orange ball on the cover. They all came out of the same stamp, and they all contain the great deception that you would look up and see some big round thing. And remember, that was the great deception of the May 15, 2003 Planet X scare. Remember that Planet X was supposed to come up and destroy the world, and there were going to be mass suicides, etc., etc. May 15, 2003, the cover of the book, a big orange ball. And that's what they want you to think Planet X is supposed to look like. It's the great deception. So the granddaddy of all the great deceptions is about to hit the stage, 2012, the movie. And everything in the world, the Mayan calendar predicts it. Galactic alignments, right out of Hollywood. The only problem? There's not a single bit of truth to it. It's the great deception. And it's going to be worldwide. So somebody out there must be really worried that the public is going to catch on. But the people that listen to this show already know. You've already been primed. And you know that when you look up and see the great comets, that's when the time is here. And also, by the way, when the people who know about these things are asked, or were asked long ago in history, when will this come to place? The very important line, remember, stated, of that date no man knows the time, and there will be many people sent to lead you astray. They'll just be flooded, you'll be flooded with misinformation. So that's exactly what's happening now. So gee, I wonder if somebody out there knows something that they're not telling us about a certain timing or whatever of possible object coming into the solar system. At any rate, this week, Venus, Jupiter, and the Moon had a very wonderful alignment. And it was very pretty up in the night sky. I'm sure many people saw that, but the thing I wanted to mention, here's another great deception. It just seems like we are bombarded by deception at every turn, and it all has to do with ancient historical events. Remember last fall, there was a whole barrage. I did a Christmas special, and it was dealing with the Christmas star. Well, it was amazing the amount of disinformation, the thousands and thousands of references on Google and etc., trying to convince people that there was no such thing as a Christmas star. Or the other one was that it was just a planetary alignment. The moon, a couple planets, yep, that was the Christmas star. But what's funny is now this planetary and lunar alignment, and this is not like they're in line on the same side of the solar system. They just happen to look that way up in the sky. They're really not close to each other. It's just a visual effect from Earth. They just happen to be in that same line from us out going out in space, but in very different positions in the solar system. So they're not electrically aligned or directly aligned with the sun, for example. They're just visually aligned from Earth. But the point is that, remember all the disinformation last year that the Christmas star was just a planetary alignment, and it had nothing to do with a comet or a tailed star or any of that. Well, the point is that these planetary alignments like we had this week, they are very common. They happen usually once or twice a year. And so that alone is enough to tell you that the planetary alignment theory for the Christmas star is absolutely false. Because the Christmas star had to be something very, very unusual. Something that was predicted for thousands of years and that would be very, very unique. So that when the people saw it, they knew that this very unique event was happening. Something that did not happen for thousands and thousands of years and was very rare. So at any rate, that's why the concept that the Christmas star was a couple planets and the moon lining up is just bogus. And one of the other big reasons is it only lasts for a couple hours. So the next night you go out there and look up and that alignment is all gone. And the Christmas star was something that was around for months and months and months. Because remember that the wise men saw it in the east, but they followed it to the west. And they followed it for a very long time. They had to travel almost by foot. We see them always riding on camels, but certainly very slow travel over many countries coming out of the east. And it took them months, if not years, to get to where they were going to. So the Christmas star has had to be something that lasted and lasted and lasted, not an overnight planetary alignment. So you can see all of the disinformation, paid disinformation people putting that information out, trying to dissuade the public, or just, in, if nothing else, trying to convince you that there was no such thing as a Christmas star. At any rate, that leads into another topic, the commercialization of Christmas. Something that very much irks me, that, for example, today, the reason I bring this up, today they announced that the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree was lit up, and that marks the beginning of Christmas. Well, it doesn't mark the beginning of Christmas season for me, that somebody in New York City lights up a Christmas tree. Sorry, that does not mean Christmas to me. But that's just one of the great deceptions. You see all of the deceptions that are put out there today. The Macy Day, Thanksgiving Day parade with Snoopy and Mickey Mouse and everybody, and the last person in the parade, Santa Claus, that master of Christmas and deception. And then, of course, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, the largest shopping day of the year. What does Christmas mean? Shopping, presents, buy, buy, buy. So you just see that all of the very simple things that were never meant to be have been taken and distorted, and everything from the Christmas star to the commercialization of Christmas to the end of the world being caused by the Mayan calendar and galactic alignments, it just doesn't end. So at any rate, I'm going to talk a little bit about the three-stage Dalton ceramic filter elements. And by the way, remember the Dalton personal water filter, the little one, about 7 inches long, about 3.5 inches in diameter, used for traveling or emergency, or some people just take them in the car with them so that they have clean water when they're traveling. Or I know a woman who just recently had a baby, and I gave one as a present just before they ran out, because then no matter where she went, she would be able to get water for the baby, filtered water. But at any rate, those are going to be back again shortly. They're not available right now, but I'm just giving you a heads up, because many, many, many people wanted to see those back, and it took a long time to get restocked with those, and that's the way the world works now. We're not living in the world we were even a year or two ago when things could be done relatively quickly, but the initial allotment of those will be in, and just watch for that on my webpage. I'll announce it on this show, of course. The Dalton personal water filter. It's about a 1 liter water filter, and I take those whenever I travel, of course. But now, I just wanted to mention also about the three-stage Dalton ceramic water filter. It's a three-stage where the carbon, the black carbon, is encapsulated inside of two filters made of very highly controlled manufactured ceramic. And these were first made back in the 1800s by John Dalton and Henry Dalton. And these were made for in England, and that's where they're still made. And so make sure you understand the real situation with water filters. The beauty of the ceramic casing is that it can be easily cleaned. You just rub it a little bit with a Scotch-Brite pad if it gets clogged or if you're in a real murky situation. And of course, those are the ones I sell on my webpage. On to the next topic. Meteor over Canada. Now, here we are, just in the middle of the Christmas season here, and all of a sudden, a big flash in the sky over Canada, seen by hundreds of thousands of people, but we actually got good video of this. Not meaning me, but on the internet, you can see this, and it's quite amazing. Apparently, somebody was driving down the road in a little town up in Canada, and for some reason had a video camera and caught this amazing footage of a meteor coming in. And I want to talk a little bit about the size and speed of that meteor and a few fun facts, so to speak, about meteor showers and the debris that comes in from outer space every day on Earth. About two fairly large meteorites hit Earth every day. But usually they're in remote places. For example, in this remote area of Canada, typically that would have gone unnoticed. People may have seen it, but it just turned out that somebody had a video camera, and you could see this bright ball coming down through the atmosphere, just like you would imagine it, very, very rapidly descending, and all of a sudden, before it hit the ground, it exploded into a million pieces. I don't know if exactly a million, but a lot of pieces. And people were out walking around the fields picking up the pieces, and they showed some. They were about old baseball or softball size. But you could see this entire field was littered with the remnants of this little asteroid or meteor that came into the atmosphere and exploded and scattered all over. Nobody was hurt, as far as I understand. But they also had security cameras at a hotel. I saw one video where the security camera, it was at night. You just saw kind of the courtyard with the chairs and things sitting around in the courtyard. All of a sudden, it looked like the sun coming across in a couple seconds, where the shadows changed direction, etc. And it was amazing that, and then all of a sudden the bright flash, and that's of course when this object exploded into brightness and then made its final descent, thousands of pieces raining down on that rural area of Canada. But a couple of these per day come into the Earth, and they estimate that around 20 to 30,000 tons of material come into the Earth. Some estimates as much as 40 tons of space matter, little chunks of rock, dust, larger chunks, 40 tons of space matter come into the Earth every day. So that's the current estimate. And how fast was this object going? Oh, probably around 20 to 30,000 miles per hour. That's just an estimate. I don't believe there was any way to really measure, but that would be a safe estimate. And it was probably only a few feet across, maybe 10 feet across at most. And that's a pretty big object. You wouldn't want to get hit by that coming in at around 20,000 miles per hour. But it got so hot so fast that it literally blew apart the heat expansion and rained all over this area. I think they figured it was about a 7 square mile area up in central Canada. Just a quick economic mention of an economic principle here before I go on to the main science topic. Deflation. We always think that inflation is our economic enemy. But remember when Thomas Jefferson made a statement as they were writing the Constitution, he said that through inflation and deflation, the bankers who would want to create phony money, remember that the Constitution of the United States, when it was first written, the entire purpose was to create a banking system and get rid of the European bankers and their phony money and phony wars and everything else that went with it. And Thomas Jefferson, these guys knew very well what the biggest enemy of the United States was at the time and would be in the future. And he said that through inflation and deflation, the bankers would rob you of everything you built and would create a situation so that your children could not live in the houses that you built. That's a paraphrase, but that's basically what's going on today. So most of people think, well, inflation is the problem, but I want to talk about the deflation part of that. Let's look at just the oil situation, for example, how the price of oil inflated over the last couple of years up to a high price of $147 a barrel last July. Well, a couple months later, it kind of somewhat stabilized, then it started to drop, and then within a few week period, it dropped down to under $50 a barrel. It actually hit a low of $49 a barrel this past, was it October or finally into November when that hit? I don't know the exact date. But only a few short months after the July high, it came down and hit a low of $49 per barrel. Now, this is the deflation part. So let me give you a couple examples of people, in fact, entire countries that were drastically affected by this deflation. Let's look at Russia. Russia had a vast storehouse of oil. And they're probably one of the most oil-rich countries on the planet with some new discoveries they made, including the one up in Siberia. So all of a sudden, Russia thinks, gee, now we are oil-rich, we're going to be a very powerful country, so we better invest in our military infrastructure. So that's what Russia did, very unwisely. So what did they do? They went out and borrowed from the world bankers. Wrong decision there, because within a few short months, deflation took the price out of oil and left them with a loan that they couldn't pay back. Isn't that interesting? So that's a good example how deflation can be used to also rob people, and that's used very effectively by the bankers. So I wanted to give that example of the way the inflation and deflation are used to take the value out of what people have built or what their, say, natural resources, as in the case of Russia. And, of course, the housing market here is another good example of deflation, devaluation, where the monetary system, they start pouring more money, and you have to understand the real reason for all the bailouts is to put as much debt on the middle class of the United States as possible and to drive down their home values at the same time. And that is done by, of course, the arms and the loans that were given out. And then within only a very short period of time, like a 5 year, they knew that they could deflate the value of the home market, creating the home bubble, and basically take all the property away from the American public. It was like taking candy from a baby. So anyway, that's how deflation helps to steal, to basically steal property, resources, hard work, labor, etc., from a population. And with the original banking system of the United States, that never would have happened, because Congress would have been creating the money by way of, because it would be based on assets. And of course now you have people making money off of stock market where there is no value, there's nothing there. It's simply a number on a piece of paper by charging interest, by redundant loans, and loaning on money that's loaned, on money that's loaned, on money that's loaned, the phony money. So all of these factors, and of course they knew this when the Constitution was written, the entire purpose was to get this country to have a country where the people could basically live and keep the fruits of their labor. And of course now, with the bailouts and with the debt burden being put on the public, and of course this will not end in the future, the same people who have created this debt inflation deflation scenario are now going back into the White House again, and you will have far more debt. The whole purpose is to put so much debt on the American public that they will never, ever, in their children and their children's children and their children's children's children beyond them, will have so much debt that they will not ever be able to pay it back. On to the main science topic. And by the way, this is the situation, the exact same situation. And I always wondered when I was a kid. I said, how do you know, we know that there was the Babylonian captivity and the Assyrian captivity, etc. How did these entire populations become enslaved? How could that ever be? Well, I think you're seeing it all come to pass again. So isn't it interesting that we are coming into a time when it is believed that there will be worldwide disasters coming from outer space? And I think the 2012 movie that I talked about earlier is just an indication that there are a lot of people out there, the Uber leaders, so to speak, who are very worried about the public knowing what's going on. There is so much effort being put into disinformation that it's just incredible the amount of money and time and effort put into the 2012 movie is just one little example. And the amount of effort trying to keep, for example, my message from reaching many people, this radio show is just a great vehicle for me to reach people all over the world and give you the correct message on what to look for, what are the true signs, and that's really the topic of tonight's show. What would this look like from a distance? What would you see? What's going to happen up in the heavens, in the sky? What would you actually see? And if you were at a distance from Earth, taking that perspective, what would a large comet passing through the solar system, what would it look like as it passed through the solar system, as it approached Earth? What exactly would you see? And, for example, let's talk about what the ancients saw as Venus, the large comet, first exploded into brightness as it came by the planet Jupiter. And, of course, this was one of Velikovsky's mistakes. He said, and this was one of his one of the things that Velikovsky made a mistake on, and he was interpreting ancient texts and what the ancients saw. So he would try and give it some kind of scientific explanation. And, of course, based on what was known in the 1950s, he kept coming up with wrong scientific explanations for his really astute observations of what the ancients saw and the geological evidence, etc., etc. And what he should have said was just left it up to the scientists and said, you guys are the scientists, you should go out and determine what caused all of this. But of course, he made some mistakes, and one of them, one of the big mistakes, was that he said that Venus, the comet, came out of Jupiter, like Jupiter spit it out, so to speak, out of its atmosphere. And, of course, that was very wrong. The really Jupiter, the planet as we know it today, really would not have the capability to just spit out this piece of matter and have it go out into the solar system and become a comet, etc. What actually did happen is when this large object came into the solar system, it probably was already discharging the solar capacitor, but it was not visible to the people from Earth. They weren't really looking for it. And, of course, they didn't have telescopes back then, at least not that we're aware of. And but they were great watchers of the sky. The ancients, of course, did not have video games or TV, and they had staffs of very well-trained observers who knew the night sky like the back of their hand. And one night, all of a sudden, Jupiter began to brighten. Now, you can imagine, just the other night, if, say, you were watching that planetary alignment with the moon, and all of a sudden, Jupiter just started to pulse. About every hour, it got brighter, and then it dimmed down to normal, and it got brighter and brighter. And all of a sudden, imagine separating away from Jupiter would be this comet forming. And you go, gee, that thing seemed to come out of Jupiter. It was born of Jupiter, and that's what the ancient myths talk about. Venus born of Jupiter. And so this is exactly what the ancients saw. And so over the next couple of nights, the comet separated away from Jupiter farther and farther and became bigger and bigger in the night sky. So certainly very curious, certainly something they would be very interested in keeping track of. So from that very first moment, you can see that the ancients were very interested in tracking the movements of Venus. So very early on it was given a name, and then it began to move through the solar system. The next thing they saw were cosmic lightning bolts zapping between Jupiter and the comet. Very interesting. Now they're watching this and they're going, look at this. This is an amazing celestial event. So they knew that something was going on. Now, the comet Venus would then move away from the planet Jupiter, and now we have a comet moving through the solar system. So the ancients were totally convinced that Venus was born of Jupiter, when in fact, in terms of astronomy, astrophysics, and space science, you would say that Jupiter captured that object. And, of course, Jupiter has a large electrical discharge in the solar capacitor, so it would only make sense that the discharge overall through the solar system would ignite that comet, and it would become a large comet as it moved away from Jupiter, exactly what the ancients tell us they saw. So this is very explainable. Now, imagine people seeing something like this today, that all of a sudden they start seeing electrical discharges between, say, a planet and a comet. And these are big. So the idea that Jupiter was throwing cosmic lightning bolts around the solar system at that time, now this ignited the entire solar system, brought up the energy of the sun. And so you can imagine that as Venus moved through the solar system, it was causing other problems. Now Venus would be moving through the asteroid belt, that region between Mars and Jupiter, filled with small chunks of rock, everything up to the size of small, very small planets. And now as Venus, the comet, moved through this region, it would be continually spitting out, because Venus wasn't just your average comet, it was a mammoth comet, a very, very large comet. And the electrical discharges, as it moved through, now people on the Earth would not be able to see those asteroids, but they would see the discharges going out from the comet, hitting them, and thus the kind of rain of cosmic lightning bolts that were flashing out from the comet. And they're sitting here on Earth watching this, It is also stated that Venus had as many as 14 tails at one time, and they stretched across the heavens. So sometimes Venus would be big, sometimes it would be small. And the ancients really, they knew quite a bit about the rhythms of the planet, the orbits of the planet. They knew how to calculate eclipses, for example. Their calendars were fairly sophisticated, but these comets were relatively lawless. They didn't obey any of the standard rhythms and patterns of the planets. They had a mind of their own, so to speak. So it's the ancients, you know, very much wanted to track these objects to see if they could get a handle on their rhythms to try and put them into some kind of orderly pattern, because this was now a new member of the solar system. It wasn't going away. It was in an orbit, locked in an orbit around the sun in the inner solar system. And once a comet comes into that region, chances are it's here to stay. And that was the case with the comet Venus. That's what the ancients talk about. They talk about the multi-tailed comet. It also grew horns. They talk very specifically about the horns coming out the forward side of the comet. And of course, these relate to plasma discharge conditions in the region around the comet. And the electrical discharge between the sun and the nebular ion cloud. Now, I described that, of course, in my books, and I've described that many times on this radio show. But basically, it's a capacitor between the sun and a nebular ion cloud that sits far beyond the planet Pluto. So this comet is probably discharging that entire region. Most comets are little. They only discharge a very localized region of the solar system. They come and go within usually a day or two. Comet Hale-Bopp was around for a period of 6 years and is a permanent member of our solar system, now on an orbit of around a little over a couple thousand years. But Comet Venus was on an orbit that probably took it around the sun every 3 to 4 to maybe 5 years. And it was in the plane of the planets. In other words, it was in what astronomers call the ecliptic, the same plane around the sun that the Earth passes in its orbit on an annual basis. So here's Venus now moving through the solar system, the tail drag changing its orbit on a near daily basis. So the ancients are very mystified by this very lawless character in the solar system. Big, very bright, very unwieldy, changing, growing horns. You can see occasionally its sunward electrical discharge. All of these things happening. Now, this is the part I just want to diverge for a minute here. This is what I think is comical about NASA and all the other people that want to still convince you that comets are dirty snowballs. When one of these days in the future, I don't know exactly when, and I never make predictions of when such things might happen, but if and when we do see one of these objects, very clearly the people are going to look up. NASA will be trying its very hardest to convince you that these are just dirty snowballs, that's just some little poofy thing up there, don't worry about it. And here's something that's lighting up the daytime sky, lighting up the night, just like the moon, very bright, changing shapes wildly, electrical discharges coming out of this object, flashing out to the other planets and the minor planets and to asteroids that it passes. And that's a little snowball? I don't think so. I think that's when the credibility of the scientific establishment will go down the tubes, because everybody will know that that ain't no little snowball. And that's exactly when, basically, the world will start to take on a new course. That's when the leaders, the uber leaders, will retreat to their caves that they've built to protect themselves with all of the resources for that they've been using over past years to build cave cities and stock them. The bushes will retreat to their underground cave dwellings down in the South American highlands. The Queen of England will go to her cave, her designated cave. The Pope will go to his designated cave. The NASA scientists will all go running for their designated cave regions, and they will leave the population up on top of the Earth to somewhat fend for themselves, mixing, I imagine, with the armies they bring in to keep the peace amongst the populace. So anyway, the point is that when people look up and see these objects in the heaven, and many times there's not just one, there's many, that'll be certainly a time when the population learns that the 2012 movie was total disinformation, that when you look up, you're not going to see a big orange ball or big round ball, you're going to see a comet. Now, let's go back to our vantage point out in outer space. Looking at the comet, and let's say, now this is actually what the ancients reported. As the comet Venus came through the solar system, it encountered Mars, and this is about what it would look like from a distance, and this is exactly what they talked about, and is very explainable using the plasma discharge comet model. Initially, there would be some flashes, some electrical discharges from the comet to the planet. And Mars at that time was a blue planet, just like Earth. It was a water planet, so it would have looked blue at a distance, not red like the Mars we see today. And eventually, a continual stream of light would be like a snake-like protrusion coming out of the comet, whipping around in space, would attach the comet to the planet. And in fact, the reason the ancients called Quetzalcoatl the serpent is because when it did lash out with an electrical discharge to Mars, the electrical discharge creates auroral activity up in the upper atmosphere of the planet, and with the tentacle-like electrical discharge coming out, and the auroras around the outer edge of the planetary surface, it looks like a snake with the planet in its jaws, if you can imagine that. Take your hand, imagine that your arm is the electrical discharge coming out from the comet, and take your fingers and just make kind of a circle with your thumb meeting up with all your other fingers. And imagine that the planet is right in the middle of your hand, kind of loosely gripped. That's what, like you were holding a baseball at a distance. That's what the electrical discharge would look like from a distance, with the light going on, the flashing, and it would look like a snake was actually pulling the atmosphere, and when that comet passed by and left, what it did is, in the case of Mars, it pulled the atmosphere in the oceans off of Mars and left the red hulk that we see today. Now, I just got word today from Brad, the host I'll be guest with on WCCO. He said that NASA made an announcement that they had photographed with their Mars rovers, what appeared to be a piece of wood on Mars. Now, if this is true, this is a NASA announcement, not mine. If this is true, then it would be really the first remarkable piece of evidence that recently Mars would have had wood on its surface. Now, I don't know the details of this, but I've always suspected that, in fact, Mars would show forests, trees, and that, in fact, if it were a water planet, as the ancients talk about, it would have been very ripe with life. And, of course, once the atmosphere and oceans were pulled off, you would see the wash, the erosion from that instantaneous movement of all of that water would pretty much destroy any remnants of items that were on that planet. So leaving just the very residue of life as it used to be. So that'll be very interesting to see if, in fact, that truly is a piece of wood. But from what I've heard, to the casual observer, it looks very much like a piece of wood. So at any rate, and I've seen a lot of high detailed pictures of Mars at scientific meetings I've gone to, and geologists are still somewhat scratching their heads over the many very strange geological formations on Mars, most of them caused by very fast moving water. And of course, Mars at this time does not have any oceans, does not have water, so to speak, not like Earth. And so what caused all of these geological features, including very pristine riverbeds that crisscross the surface of Mars? So at any rate, now going back to our vantage point from outer space, imagine that you were at a distance. You were in a space colony floating around the solar system, far away from the Earth and the comet that were encountering each other, or Mars, as the case may be. What would happen to objects in orbit around, in, for example, our satellite fleet that surrounds Earth? Some of these satellites are in low Earth orbit, just 100 miles up. Some of the satellites, the geosynchronous satellites, are up about 25,000 miles from the Earth. And so there's a very wide range of military satellites that are out farther, and also in the gap in between. So there's a tremendous number of satellites that are out there. What would happen to these, or what would happen to the space station? What would happen if the Uber leaders decided they wanted to build some kind of tremendous space station and go up there and weather the storm of an object coming into the solar system? Well, the answer is that these objects would be zapped with tremendous electrical discharges and pretty much destroyed. They would be, the bug in the backyard bug killer, the zapper. That's what would happen to any kind of object that was in outer space. So it's not exactly the place you would want to be in Earth orbit if one of these objects came by. You would not fare very well. Fried to a crisp might be the best way to describe what would happen. So at any rate, the reason I've talked many times before about colonizing space and getting real self-sufficient space colonies sprinkled all around the solar system is because when one of these comets comes through, more than likely it's going to leave again, as most of them do, for a long period of time, or even if, like, Hale-Bopp is on a couple thousand-year orbit, it's not going to be back for a few thousand years. Only rarely do they become captured, as Venus became captured, and stick around to eventually become a planet. The reason Venus became a planet, of course, is due to the tail drag of the comet, which reduces its orbit, and eventually Venus settled into the orbit where we see it today. Venus still very much has comet-like characteristics, but the overall large discharge has died down because Venus is now in a circular orbit, all explained very nicely by the plasma discharge comet model. I noticed that NASA scientists more and more are using trying to mimic, I would say, my concepts, some of them saying that some of the moons of Saturn are very comet-like. They very much resemble the characteristics they've seen around comets. It's just that they're much bigger, of course. And of course, I've said all along that all of the planets and moons except Jupiter were captured at a later date, with Jupiter and the Sun being the original members, the original twin star of the twin star system we live in, which is the Sun and Jupiter, all of the rest of the objects being captured at some later date. So at any rate, I've described what a comet would look like from a distance. And I think the biggest image I want you to leave with from tonight's lecture is that this idea that the comet would send out an electrical discharge, kind of like an arm extension coming out of the comet. And as it encountered a planet, it would look from a distance like a snake, like a snapping snake with its jaws wrapped around the planet. And of course, the jaws, as I said, were due to the electrical discharges in the upper atmosphere of the planet, of the aurora, so to speak, that would be caused. And if you were down on that planet, Let's take a look at what the ancients saw. They saw what they called the red hand of death. They saw electrical discharges coming all the way down to the surface of the earth. That was the towering pillar of fire that Moses saw. They actually saw this, and it didn't just last a little bit. It lasted a number of days. And it was on one side of them at one point, and then later it was on the other side of them. It jumped. We'll see those same kind of markings on Mars, for example, where there are three volcanoes that looks like they were burned into the Martian surface at linearly, like boom, there's one volcano. Then it snaps and jumps over, burning another hole in the Martian surface, creating a second volcano, and then along the same line of passage, a third volcano. So these type of events were seen from below. That's what the ancients saw. That's what Moses saw. That's what they talked about as all of this fury was going on, the water boiling for years afterwards, the earthquakes. Stories that came back to us from Atlantis through the ancient Egyptian priest cults, all of these stories relate to ancient disasters. And one last thing about the Mayan calendar, remember that the Mayans lived through all of this also, and that the reason the Mayan calendar was revised and revised and revised was because the original calendar was destroyed when the Earth moved, when the Earth's rotation rate changed, when the orbit of the Earth changed. All of the elements of the old calendar were destroyed. So this idea that somehow the ancient Mayan calendar from thousands of years ago predicted the date of 2012 is ridiculous, because the Mayan calendar as we know it today probably did not originate until around 700 or 800 AD, the golden era of the Mayans. They kept a lot of the information, their writing system, etc., in their mythology of Quetzalcoatl from the ancient civilizations that preceded them. But the Mayan calendar we see today was not solidified probably until around 700 or 800 AD. So all of this ridiculous hyperbole over the Mayan calendar predicting the end of the world is absolute nonsense. The idea that there's some strange and magical galactic alignment that's going to occur on a special date in December. By the way, we're coming up to December 21st, 2008, and it will have the exact same alignment as 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. We go through this same galactic alignment every year, and we have been for thousands of years, and the world did not end on any of those dates. So you can see how ridiculous this so-called science is that's going behind this Hollywood movie 2012. And of course, the whole purpose is to deceive. Just like Santa Claus deceives the purpose of Christmas, just like the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree deceives the purpose of Christmas, just like the people who want to deceive you that there was no such thing as a Christmas star, the movie 2012, on, and it simply is not going to end. It's just going to continue and continue in the future. So the one thing I just recommend that everybody do, prepare to take care of yourself. Very simple. Be your own source of clean, fresh water. Have some grains, dried goods on hand, and learn how to use them. Use them on a regular basis, and actually you'll be a lot healthier. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.